Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
David!
Gagan!
How are you doing, buddy? We're back. I mean, it's not been that long, actually, and we're back already. So this might be a thing again.
Well, they always say you wait an hour for a bus and then two come along at once. So people waited about a year for us and then two podcasts at once. Yeah.
I think I just can't stay away from talking to you, mate. That's what it is. You know, or maybe you talking to me because it's therapy. I don't know.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. I mean... Oh. But the club just keep doing stuff that warrants us having a chat.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's such an incredible, you know, incredible season already. I really hope we do go on to achieve what we want to achieve and what the targets are, and we're well placed for that.
Mm.
But yeah, the hits keep coming. It was looking depressing at one point because of the Jürgen news, but... you know, we took it as a positive. I think I was on Desi for that one, where I did say, look, let's enjoy the last 5 months. Let's not get too depressed about it. I don't think that's the way we should send Jürgen out. And he is proving everything I said at that point correct. He is going out with an absolute bang, but it's not going to bang in a bad way. It's banging in all the best ways. And what he's leaving behind is actually a squad that is so impressive, Dave. Like, I was fearing the worst after the first 10 minutes, 15 minutes on Sunday in that City game. I thought maybe it's a step too far again. I thought maybe it's a step too far for the squad now. We've got too many out. 8 players that could have played in the first team for us,
yeah,
that are starters that were out. That's 8 players. That's a lot, right?
Yeah, and, especially when they're only missing Jack Grealish, and who doesn't start every game anyway.
Who cares? Yeah, he's shite compared to the rest of them. To be, I mean, he's good, but he's not as good as the others. In my book, I would play all the other players that were playing. That was their first team out. And
yeah,
the way we performed after halftime especially, it felt like, you know, I know they had a couple of chances. One was a Kelleher kind of deflection onto... And then Doku did well, but apart from that, though, which were low chance, you know, they're just, well, actually, let's ignore the Foden one because it was handball, so it wouldn't have been allowed anyway. But the Doku one, very low chance. It wasn't a high. It wasn't like a clear chance. He just did really well for the shot.
Yeah, and like if they're Man City, they're always going to have a chance or two.
Yeah,
like you're never ever going to keep them out for the entire 45 minutes. They've got Erling Haaland, Phil Foden, Bernardo Silva, KDB. They've got Julian Alvarez, Doku. They've got, you know, they've got so much quality. They're always, always, always going to have good chances in a 45-minute spell. And so there's the Foden chance where he gets in on his right foot and Kelleher comes out and makes a good save, but he's on his weaker foot. And then there's that Doku chance. But again, he's on his weaker foot. We haven't allowed anybody in their team a good chance on their stronger foot for 45 minutes, all while creating really good chances for ourselves and other really good opportunities that didn't quite develop into chances because the final ball just wasn't there.
Mm.
But I thought we were so good on Sunday. I know in the first 15 minutes, they were definitely the better team. Then I thought we came back into it. Then they score. But I thought from when they scored till half time, we were looking the better team. And then I just think we were brilliant second half.
We were.
Absolutely brilliant. And could easily have won the game 3 or 4-1.
Yeah, to be able to create 4 or 5 big chances. I mean, it should have been 5 because Diaz didn't control it. But I mean, I think there was like the penalty is a big chance. Then we had the Darwin chance that was Darwin just couldn't get to. Had he got a better touch? He was stretching already. I don't want him to stretch too much. He might do his hamstring again. So I want him to... he was stretching already and Ortega saved. Then there was the Diaz one-on-one. That's 3. Diaz could have had the one in with the when he touched it. That would have been 4. You know, just to be able to create that amount of big chances against them, you know, we should have had a penalty at the end as well. It was like a siege at the end. And I think the commentators and all the pundits were right in saying, we haven't seen, and Klopp himself said, you know, we probably haven't dominated like that where they didn't get, you know, didn't come back at us with chances and stuff. Like, even I know you mentioned on Daily Red that we hammered them in the 4-3, but we were playing very much counter-attacking football in that game, very much so. They had the whole ball.
Yeah.
That's why, but this one, we literally dominated the ball as well, second half, which is, we've never done that against them. Never. That's why Klopp was like, this is new for us because we've actually dominated the game. Whereas those games in the past, City would always dominate ball. We just smashed them by pressing the shit out of them and causing those mistakes. So what I was really, really impressed about, Dave, was that we had 8 players out. And that's you know, and to do that with those 8 players out and with this team, it just shows what a great position Klopp is leaving the club in, you know, for the next manager.
This is the thing that I don't think people, including quite a bit of our fan base, I just don't think they fully grasp this. Like, so many people are trying to compare it to the Ferguson thing and the Wenger thing and whatever else, but like, none of them left behind a squad like this. Like, that game at the weekend, we didn't have Alisson Becker, who's the best goalkeeper in the world. Quevin Kelleher stepped in and put in another great performance, as he has week on week now for, a month? We didn't have the best right back in the world. Connor Bradley steps in and was very, very good. We didn't have Ibu, who for me is the second best centre-back in the league. Gerald Kwanzaa stepped in and looked like he every time Gerald Kwanzaa plays, I am absolutely amazed that he's not like 27 with 60 caps for England and 400 appearances for us, because he just looks so composed, so confident. He never gets rattled. Like, he was up against Erling Haaland and he never got rattled. We didn't have Curtis Jones. We didn't have Diogo Jota, who's our best finisher. And yet other lads are stepping up. And, you know, it's not just them that we're missing. We didn't have Gravenberch. We didn't have Besetic. We didn't have Thiago. Jadon Dans is also out injured. Now, he wouldn't obviously be a starter, but he's somebody that we've been using off the bench, and he's someone that Jurgen might have thrown on in the late stages there because he is that kind of poacher in the box. So not only are we missing like vital starters, we're missing important depth as well, and yet it doesn't seem to bother this team. It's just next man up. Whoever he's called on this season has just come in and done the job. We went to Forest a week ago and Bobby Clark started and just stepped up and was like, yeah, this is fine. No problem. I can do this. We've had James McConnell come on in cup finals. No issue. More than good enough. It's remarkable that people are not looking at the bigger picture here, where we've got a team that's currently competing, won one trophy and competing for three more, despite all these injuries. And all of these young players are coming along. And now, as we know, we're going to rebuild an elite structure to the club, which is going to make the next manager's job so much easier.
And that's what we want to get to next. I mean, I completely agree with everything you've said. We talked about it on the last pod. Next man up was the last pod, and everybody is stepping up. I love Bradley. I think Kwanzaa's the next calm as you like. He's so calm. If he had the pace of Virgil, it'd be the next level. But still, sometimes you don't need pace. Sami Hyypiä didn't have pace. He was fucking fantastic. So you can still be a great CB without the pace.
I mean, Jamie Carragher couldn't run.
Yeah.
He played over 700 times for us.
Yeah, exactly. So you can still be. And I was really enthused by how he made a run forward, like Matip and shot.
Yeah. But the confidence to do that, to just dribble past someone and say, you know what? I'll have a shot. I won't put my foot in it now and look for somebody else. I'm just going to have a crack. And it was a decent crack as well.
It was. It forced a save at the end of the day, and that's what you want. And it was a great save because the guy actually pushed it out of the box rather than bringing it into Gakpo, who was there. So it would have been a tap in if it was a poor save. But yeah, I mean, there's a load of players we should talk about. Mac, and you know, I mean, I really hope Dom turns on the afterburners for the next 10 games because if he comes into form as we, you know, get to the end of the season, he's going to smash it.
Yeah.
So, and we're going to go up another level, you know? So, but yeah, at the end of the day, what was I going to say? Edwards, let's get to the main point here. This was a bit of a surprise when it first broke, like a couple of weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, whenever the rumor started, because obviously all of the news that came out when he'd left was that he'd never go back. And there was other news that but obviously we know that's because everybody thought Jürgen would be here for a long, long time, and that he kept on renewing. And even up until December, people were saying this guy might renew again. Like literally up until when he decided, no, I'm leaving, there were rumors he was about to renew. So I could see how things change. Because obviously it just didn't work between them. Whatever the reported stuff is, nobody knows 100% for certain what it was, but we know that there was problems. Yeah. So now we can draw a line under it. And it's the return of the prodigal son. I know a lot of people are going to say, oh, it's just fucking Edwards. He didn't do anything, but he did. He played a part. Everybody played a part in getting this Liverpool to where it was when it won the first Champions League title. In this regime, when it won that Premier League title, they all played a part. Klopp is a major component, but I believe the structure was also a major component of it. They were both a part of it. We won't put down one or the other. Yeah. It literally was a big team. And we lost half of that in the last two seasons when things were falling off. Klopp's got it back this year. Fair play to him, because we all doubted him that he would. This summer, we did. I'm not going to lie about it. We thought that the squad wasn't good enough. We thought that these kids have stepped up massively for him. Maybe there's a bit of luck there as well. But still, the fact that the academy is playing the way Klopp wants to play has made this easier. So credit to Klopp for it as well. And the academy staff, everybody down there, they all deserve the praise. So that's a different team. Klopp and all of the backroom staff, all of the staff down that's been working with these kids that was born, they all deserve praise for what's happening right now as well. Who doesn't deserve praise is basically, I don't know what the hell's happening in the physio room or in our sports science area, because we have not looked after players at all. Could have been even better had we looked after players better. But now we were all worried that when Klopp goes, there's zero structure in the club. There's nothing there. Mm. It's going to fall to shit. And that was the biggest fear everyone had. And now everyone I speak to is like, no one's glad Klopp is going, but what they're glad is that we're going to get some structure. And we're going to have the guy that was with Klopp when we were at the top of the game, literally 103 out of 105 points. We will have half of that part back. So, Dave, I couldn't be happier. I'll be honest with you. This is, I know I'm one of those stat geeks and people will say the status are, I am so chuffed that he's back at the club and he's going to be running football operations, whether it's multi or Liverpool, which it looks like it is multi-club, which doesn't bother me in the slightest, by the way. And I think it's good for us. And yeah, I'm just ecstatic that we're going to have some structure back, and literally ahead of, you know, a CEO of football is massive. And I can see why you came back for that role. It's huge.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
I don't need a VPN. I've got nothing to hide. This is what I used to tell myself before I hooked up with LibertyShield.com. Not only is my home internet now fully encrypted, but I can now access all the websites I want, whenever I want, and do so from absolutely anywhere. As a Liverpool fan, I love to know I can now watch every match, regardless of whether it's on UK TV or not. My Liberty Shield VPN makes sure nothing is blocked and guarantees me super fast streaming speed throughout that match. You can get connected right now with their software package, which includes a 48-hour no-obligation free trial and instant access to their apps for Apple, Android, Fire TV, PC, Mac, and Android TV. Or go a step further like I have and get one of their pre-configured VPN routers. These small but powerful devices allow you to easily connect every device in your home to VPN, making it the perfect solution for smart TVs, Mac boxes, and games consoles. Visit LibertyShield.com today and use coupon code AIVPN25 to get 25% off at checkout.
Yeah, that's the thing. This is the role he wanted all along. And like, look, everybody's pretty much knows that the reason he left was Jurgen, and the reason he wasn't going to come back was that him and Jurgen didn't really get on. They couldn't really work together anymore. But there's no question that when they were working together in lockstep in the early years, that both of them were vital. Now, you would say probably, 65-35 in favor of Jurgen if you were splitting 100%. But that 35% was vital. We don't win the European Cup and the Premier League without that 35%, because we don't buy Salah without Edwards. We don't identify Van Dijk very early. And let's remember, Edwards identified Van Dijk before Jurgen came to the club, before Van Dijk went to Southampton. So it's not like a thing where it's just been Jurgen. Edwards was also vital in the Alisson Becker identification and many others. Jurgen was the one that sold the players on the project, but brought the players in and then built the team once he had the players. But Edwards was absolutely vital in the identification of players and in also the way we operated, selling players for overvalue and buying players undervalue. That's where Edwards was key. That team doesn't come together without him. And we did lose a lot when he left. And I think if you look at our recruitment since he left, it hasn't been as good. Now, it's still been decent because obviously we bought players like Darwin. But it hasn't quite been as good as it was when Edwards was here the first time. But the structure is absolutely vital to any football club. And when you look at the issues that Arsenal had, their issues didn't start when Wenger left. Their issues started when David Dean left. And they no longer had a strong football structure above Wenger. And what happened was they brought in lesser people who would bow to Wenger. and Wenger attained more and more power. And the problem there is that when Wenger left, now there's nobody. David Dean was vital. Arsenal haven't won a major trophy since David Dean left. Wenger was there 10 years after him and only won a few FA Cups. At United, it wasn't just that Ferguson left, but David Gill left as well. And if you ask United fans, who's been the biggest issue at your club the last decade or so, they will, almost to a man or woman, say Ed Woodward has been the biggest issue because he wasn't good enough at the job. But when they had David Gill, they had somebody who was very, very good at what he did. And him and Ferguson worked very well together. So when both of them left, it created this massive power vacuum. Now, what's happened at Liverpool in the last couple of years, obviously, is Edwards left, Jurgen attained more power. Julian Ward came in. Julian Ward left after a year. And Jurgen basically attained all the power. And Jörg Schmatke, when he was interviewed, basically said, I'm here basically as an assistant to Jurgen. Now, that's not the way the sporting director role should work anywhere. But that's how it's worked at Liverpool for the last couple of years. So the risk was Jurgen leaves and we just bring in a manager to replace Jurgen and bring in a sporting director to be the same kind of assistant to him. And that's just going to lead to its own problems because whoever you bring in is not going to be Jurgen Klopp. And they're not going to have his level of experience, his level of leadership, his level of man management. So you're going to start to find bigger areas of weakness around that manager. Whereas because of who Jurgen is and because of what Jurgen has learned, we all know Jurgen's a student of the game, but he learned a lot working with Michael Zorc. He'll have learned a lot working with Edwards on the day-to-day running of the club above team level. So Jurgen's been able to fill in a lot of that. And it's probably why his energy levels have dropped. In his own words, it's probably because he's been stretched too thin, which, if you think back, was always my concern with him, that we would allow a Wenger situation where we actually overworked him. And I think that's basically what's happened here. But by us...
I agree with that, by the way. I think he's had too much on his plate. Literally, he ran recruitment this... You know, this summer.
This last couple of windows.
And you could tell how much that took a toll on him.
Exactly. And he's been too connected to the recruitment as well. So it's taking too much out of him. He's also probably got too much involvement in the medical department. He's got too much involvement with the academy. Whereas with a sporting director, now Edwards obviously is coming in above that. Richard Hughes, it looks like, will be the sporting director. The idea of the sporting director below the sporting CEO, because there's a few clubs that do this. Inter Milan is probably the best one in terms of how their structure works. So Beppe Morata is their general manager or sporting CEO. It's the same type of thing. And he's general manager sporting is his actual title. But he basically runs the day-to-day football operations at the club. He oversees the big picture. He oversees everything. But beneath him, they also have a sporting director type figure. And his job is the day-to-day connectivity of the departments. So he's the one linking the departments, making sure everything's running smoothly, implementing processes, making sure they're followed properly, and filtering the information from each of those departments into just what the manager needs to know. So when Simone Inzaghi comes into work in the morning, he's able to be told A, B, and C, and that's all he needs to know. This is the information that he absolutely needs to know that's vital for him to do his job to the best level. And all the noise, all the problems, everything else, the sporting director deals with that and takes that off the manager's plate. So now the manager's able to be more focused, which is what we used to do. And it's also what Jurgen was used to at Dortmund, where Michael Zorc took all of that crap off Jurgen's plate and meant that Jurgen just had the information he needed. And then Zorc and, is it Watke, the guy who was the CEO, they would deal with the business side, the transfers, all that kind of noise would be taken away from Klopp. And that's what used to happen with us, where Mike Gordon has unofficially, but officially, been our sporting CEO for years. And Edwards was the sporting director. So Edwards was the one doing what Richard Hughes will do, and Gordon was the one doing a lot of what Edwards will do. This is going to create a much easier role for the new manager to walk into, because everything's going to be taken care of. And they're just going to be getting filtered information. And they're going to obviously have their own involvement in appointments, in recruitment. But they're not going to have to handle the day-to-day. So if Liverpool are trying to buy a player and it's Alonso as the manager, he's not going to have to be trying to juggle four or five things and fit in, oh, I have to do this recruitment stuff as well. And that's four meetings a day during the summer or whatever it is. You know, it might just be four little huddles where they get together, have a quick chat, right, this is how these deals are progressing, yada, yada, yada. Because you know, almost all of this stuff is done in person because they're always afraid that if it's done over email or anything, that there'll be leaks or whatever. So that's time out of a manager's day that he's not going to have to waste. He's just going to be told this is what's happening. He's only going to have that one point of contact on that type of stuff. So it means that whoever the next manager isn't going to have to deal with as much as Jurgen's had. Now, let's be fair. Much of the reason Jurgen has had to deal with it is because Jurgen has wanted to deal with it. Like, Jurgen hasn't been the victim here. Jurgen has actively sought a bigger role, more involvement. But now...
Well, or it's worked out that way because the way they were working didn't suit the structure. So, for example, it didn't suit Edwards when he was here. He was like, well, I've got no say. You know, and then when Ward was in, there was a reason why someone leaves after 12 months. You know,
yeah, waits 10 years for their dream job and then leaves.
And then because they're just not getting a say, and you're driving it yourself anyway, so you may as well do the job. You know, so I think they needed someone to, you know, Klopp wanted someone just to go and do the negotiating and stuff. But at the end of the day, some people ain't going to want that. Some people are going to want a little bit more, you know, and want to actually to have some control. And therefore, he had to then assume it because Smacta came in, and let's be honest, that guy did nothing.
No. You know?
He just took money for nothing. And Klopp, it kind of fell on him to do all the work.
It didn't fall on him, though. Like, let's be fair.
Well,
Edwards had a lot of say.
Sorry.
And then Jurgen won a league title and a Champions League, and Jurgen got more control. Jurgen actively did seek that out. So Edwards' role shrank by Jurgen's own desire. And then when Ward took over, Ward was in that situation where he was basically to be the assistant. That's not what he signed up for. It's not what he wanted. Schmacke was happy to do that because Schmacke was retired. He's living in Ibiza.
He was still there while he was working.
You know what I mean? He's working off a laptop in Ibiza. I wonder, was there air conditioning? Maybe we'll get it. Maybe Neil Ashton can tell us.
By his pool.
But it's understandable that Jurgen, having won what he won, it's understandable that he wanted to, you know, to get a bit more control and do things maybe a little bit more his way. Because we did note around that time there was a notable shift in the way people talked about who we'd target in the market as well, that we were going to target more the finished product, ready-made players. Now, obviously, we'd done that a little bit with some of the players we'd signed, but that was allegedly going to be more of our direction. Now, in the end, it's not what happened, but Jurgen wanted more control. Jurgen got more control, and that's fine because it's Jurgen Klopp. It's not like he's Brendan Rodgers when Brendan Rodgers got more control. Jurgen had actually won the biggest prizes. The unfortunate side of that is that it did affect the club structure, but now we have that opportunity to put the structure back in place.
We do.
And the thing here as well is Edwards is in such a senior position now. Remember, when Jurgen took over, Edwards was still just, I think he was the head of analytics or something, and then he got promoted to technical director or whatever it was, and then he got promoted to sporting director, but Jurgen was at the club when Edwards got promoted to sporting director. So there was always that kind of, because a sporting director in theory should be above the manager in terms of your organizational chart. Now, because he's in such a senior role, whoever the manager comes in, they might, Richard Hughes might not have more power than the manager, but Edwards absolutely will.
Yeah.
And that's where this is vital for us, because Mike Gordon, as good a job as Mike Gordon has done, and he deserves huge amounts of credit for the way he's worked at the club for the last, well, 12 or 13 years, Mike Gordon didn't have a background in football, and Mike Gordon was always learning on the job, whereas Edwards is coming in with a huge amount of experience already into that role, knowing what he needs to do. So this puts us in an even stronger position than we were. And for those that will say, oh, it was all Jurgen, well, let's not fucking forget, Edwards was one of the key figures in appointing Jurgen.
Mm-hmm.
So he's obviously, he knows what he's doing in terms of spotting a manager as well as players.
I think you got to get a manager that's going to get respected for one, and also has some form of a way of playing that they believe in themselves, you know?
Yeah.
And also, this will be the great time to go back to that structure that you just talked about, where the manager just comes and says, hey, this is what I need. I need players that do this. They need to fit this role, this role, this role, this role. Yeah, go and get me someone who does all those things. And then they come back and bring a couple of players and they say, right, we're going to go through these players with you in a meeting. They go through them and say, this is why we think these people fit. How does that work for you? Okay, I prefer that one. I prefer this one. You know, that's it. That's where the manager's role is. You still get to choose, but let the guys do their jobs. Let them pick the players. Let them bring back the players that you want and how they may fit your team. And then you decide which one you want. And then off we go. And we'll do it. Then they'll put a priority on it. This one, this one, this one. Right. If we can't get him, we'll get him. And if we can't get them, we got that. It's stuff like that. It's like, it's just good business. It's good structure, good management from a CEO of football. You know, that's how it should be. Let the manager focus on what he needs and the coaching. Let them focus on managing the players. Let them focus on that. And that's, you know, maybe if that had stayed, Jurgen wouldn't be going now. You know, I do firmly believe that if he had just been working with players only, it would be completely fine. He would be staying. But it's because it's got to where it's got to. And then Schmeichter. I mean, did you talk about Schmeichter? Did you remember the joke where we got Caicedo? Schmeichter went on a bender and didn't come back for 2 weeks. Realized when he came back, we didn't get Caicedo.
Sounds about right as well. To be fair,
like what? I thought we got a deal done. yeah.
The thing is as well, right? When Jurgen came to Liverpool, Jurgen was in his late 40s.
Yeah.
And had 14 years of managerial experience under his belt.
Mm.
Jurgen was a well-established quantity at that point. So he was always going to come in. And there was also, he was Jurgen Klopp. He was lauded the world over as a manager because of what he'd done at Dortmund. The two guys were allegedly looking at more than anybody else here are Ruben Amorim and Xabi Alonso. They're both considerably younger than Jurgen was. Alonso's 5 years younger. Amorim is 8 years younger than Jurgen was. They both have far less experience than Jurgen did. Alonso's about a year and a half into being a senior manager. Before that, he was obviously with Real Sociedad B.
If he achieves, though, what he achieves...
Yeah, but that's not the point. The point
it'll
is,
be massive, won't it?
At his age,
oh, right, okay.
The fact that he's, and the same with Amorim, who's 39 and has 4 years' experience, they're younger and less likely to be as demanding as Jurgen. They're also much closer removed from their playing days, and they played in the era of the sporting director. They played for clubs where the sporting director ran recruitment, ran the club, basically, and managers came and went. Jurgen didn't. Jurgen played in the older era, in the 80s, the 90s. That's Jurgen's era of playing. So the mindset will be different with Amorim and Alonso. Amorim and Alonso, obviously, being Portuguese and Spanish, the sporting director model has been in those countries longer than it was in Germany. It only really came into Germany in like the mid-2000s. Now, Jurgen worked for Mainz, who had a sporting director for a long time. they were one of the pioneers of it in German football. But the other two lads grew up in football with that system. So they don't know any different. And they don't, I don't think either of them are going to be as demanding as Jürgen would be for more control, because of their background, because of their age. I think their personalities as well. I don't think either of them are as... Like Jürgen is a very forceful personality. Amorim can be, but there's also a very calm side to him. Alonso is just very calm and composed anyway. I think they will be happier to work within a structure. I also think with Jürgen, Jürgen is a long-term manager. Like Jürgen comes into a club and it's like, it's going to be 7 years minimum. 7 years at Mainz, seven at Dortmund or eight at Dortmund, and now nine with us. Amorim was at Braga for 3 months. He'll have been at Sporting for 3.5 years. Alonso will have been at Leverkusen for less than 2 years. So they're not in that mindset of, I'm going to be here a decade. Like they might look at each job as, I'm going for 5 years and then we'll reassess. But it's 5 years and that's what I'm building towards. They don't come in with that really long-term view the way Jürgen did. I just think the structure will be a lot easier as well with that type of manager, that younger, newer generation manager, than with Jürgen, who's a lot of his principles are from that older generation. And if you look at who Jürgen admires as a manager, it's the likes of Alex Ferguson, who managed the club from the top down. Whereas with Amorim and Alonso, it'll be more like your Peps, your Mourinhos, guys who worked under sporting directors for most of their careers, guys who coached the team first and foremost, and then looked after whatever else afterwards. So that's one of the great things about Jürgen is he is quite good at enabling others. So we know that he has enabled Pep and Linders quite a lot in terms of the coaching side of things. Linders runs the training sessions. Well, Alonso and Amorim run their own training sessions because that's the generation that they're from.
Hey guys, it's Eddie Gibbs from Anfield Index here. I hope you're enjoying this podcast and I'm sorry to call time on the show before it ends. In the current climate, it's tougher than ever before to offer podcasts for free. At Anfield Index, we produce over 75 free shows every month, which I'm confident is unparalleled in the LFC sphere. Whilst we'd love to offer everything for free, the production costs now make this impossible. That said, we don't want to follow the model of other channels and lock all of our content behind a paywall. So what we've decided to do is to continue offering every show for free, but cut that offering to 30 minutes on our longer shows. So to get all of our shows in full and enjoy the best of everything we have to offer, we really hope you'll consider supporting the channel and signing up at AnfieldIndexPro.com. For about the price of one cup of coffee, you'll get every podcast in full with zero ads. You'll also get access to our LFC VIP community, where you can enjoy live podcasts, engage with our podcasters, and chat with other Reds in real time. So that website again, AnfieldIndexPro.com. Join today.
Sports Social Podcast Network.